What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Tropp, and I'm your host, Katie Tropp. Well, since we are stuck in sports fan purgatory 2.0 for the season, and not a lot is going on with sports, I've decided today's episode, I'm going to go ahead and basically pick five topics from each of the main sports and just kind of talk about what's going on in sports and what we can expect from things coming up in baseball, football, basketball, and within fighting as well. So let's get right into it. So we're going to first start off with baseball. Since we are heading into the second half of the season, you know, the All-Star break is next week. That's technically the second half of the season. We're going to go ahead and do the Trop 5 MLB second half storylines. I just picked five storylines that I kind of feel like we're going to be looking out for coming up in the second half of the season. So let's begin with topic number one. Will the injuries catch up with the Los Angeles Dodgers? And, you know, I mean, this entire season, that's pretty much been the theme for the Dodgers is one dude gets hurt, another guy comes back. One dude gets hurt, another guy comes back. And it just kind of feels like that's been the rotation for their entire season. And it's mostly been their starting pitchers. For the most part, offensively, they're not really having any issues. Their main guys are staying healthy. And then when some of their guys have been unhealthy, like Freeman or Betts, they haven't been out that long. So it's not really the offensive side of the ball that's having the issues. It's mostly the starting pitching and the bullpen. It isn't as terrible, I would say. But, I mean, the starting pitching, it's just it feels like every one of their starting pitchers has suffered some debilitating injury. A couple of the dudes are on the 60-day IL. So it's just been a lot for the Dodgers, but yet here they still are. They're still in first place in their division by a long shot. I mean, I feel like they're going to easily win the National League West. Good chance of them being the number one overall seed. I mean, at least at this point in the season. But I will say, this has kind of been the theme of the Dodgers for years now. And last year they did win the World Series, so it didn't seem to bother them that much or really hinder them at all. But it's going to be interesting to see, are we going to see any more debilitating injuries along the way? Also of note with the Dodgers, what's going to happen with Shohei Ohtani and pitching? Because we all know he's having yet another fantastic MVP-like season behind the bat. But he has pitched a couple of times already, and they've been pretty solid outings. Nothing out of the ordinary. Of course, they're kind of easing him back into it, but is he going to eventually be the guy and work his way into this starting rotation? Will all these injuries force him to step into this starting rotation? And is it going to affect him? Is he going to end up injured? I mean, that's kind of been his thing as well. At the starting pitching position, he definitely has suffered some injuries over the last couple of seasons. So that's nothing new for him. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Dodgers are able to overcome these injuries. I personally feel like they will. I mean, they're the Dodgers. They've got one of the greatest rosters, constructed the man, but is it going to catch up to them for a playoff run? That's where I kind of feel like that's where it might be an issue is once we hit the postseason and they go up against a team maybe like the Phillies who've got a lot of depth. They've got great starting pitching, and obviously who knows where we're going to be once we hit the playoffs because we've got a long time till we get there. But I kind of feel like that's when the injuries may end up catching up to the Dodgers. But at the same time, they're going to be getting some dudes back by the postseason as well. So it may not actually be as bad as it could be. All right, the next topic on the MLB second half storylines is who will win the American League East. I mean, this pretty much, this division has been dominated by the Yankees for the majority of the season. But the Toronto Blue Jays just took over the division lead last week. The Tampa Bay Rays have been hovering. The Boston Red Sox, they've been up and down all season. And in the Baltimore Orioles, they're starting to get going. The thing about the Orioles is they do have a lot of talent. It's just they haven't been able to get it going at all this season. And it feels like every time they get going, they start falling back. And I just kind of feel like they're way too far behind to really get going in this division. But hey, who knows? They definitely have a shot at least fucking up the postseason for a few of these teams if there ends up being a postseason race. which I won't be shocked if there is, because, I mean, if you look at it right now, the Blue Jays have a 2-game lead over the Yankees. The Tampa Bay Rays are 4.5 behind the Toronto Blue Jays. The Red Sox are 5, and the Orioles are 11.5. So it's pretty close right there. I kind of feel like if the Blue Jays start to go on a slide, then the Yankees could easily take over. But then you just can't count out the Red Sox. The Red Sox have been trying to put it together this season. It just kind of feels like every time they get going, they fall back. Every time they get going, they fall back. They have had some issues with injuries over the season as well, but they're still a team that has a lot of talent, and I wouldn't be shocked if they just end up making some moves towards the end of the season where they're just able to get in on one of those wild card spots. But I definitely think them and the Orioles could make things difficult for this American League East. But in the end, I think the Yankees are the more talented team, the better team. I feel like they're going to win the division overall in the end. But at the same time, it's just all of these teams in this division are very, very streaky in both ways. When it comes to wins and losses, they go on these major streaks all the time. And that's kind of what the problem is here with all of them at this point. It's really just who's going to put it together. And since the Yankees, you know, they've got Aaron Judge, they've got Carlos Rodon, and they've got Max Fried. Those three guys have been solid. Those are top-tier dudes. And when your top-tier dudes are playing at top-tier level, I really can't count them out. Even though the Blue Jays, they've got a lot of guys stepping it up right now as well, but are they going to be able to maintain that throughout the second half of the season? We'll find out. But the American League East has always pretty much been a stacked division. It's always been a battle to the bitter end, and I expect it to be a battle to the bitter end of this season as well. Then the next MLB second half storyline I have is, can the Cubs keep up the offense? This has been another team very similar to the Dodgers, where the starting pitcher position is just getting decimated. Every time they got a guy who comes out and just dominates, what happens? He gets injured. And that's pretty much been their theme of the season. Like I said last week, Jameson Taillon, he's now on the injured list, and he was having a phenomenal year himself. So that's just kind of been the theme of the season for the Cubs. But then on the offensive side of the ball, this has been the best team offensively, hands down, from start all the way up until this point in July. And it feels like they're getting hotter. I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong is having a fantastic year. I mean, everybody pretty much expected this guy to be a pretty solid baseball player, but you just never know what you're going to get. And the guy is having a historic year. He's literally one of only three players at this point in the season who's already got 25 home runs and 25 stolen bases on the season. And that just goes to show you what kind of a player he is. So he's having a fantastic year. Then you've got Seiya Suzuki. He's also having a fantastic year. And it just kind of feels like, you know, Dansby Swanson, he's stepping it up as well. Offensively, this team is flat out great. And they've been dominating their division from the start to finish. Although, you know, Milwaukee's there, St. Louis is there. So they've got those two teams right there. But it feels like the Cubs, if they stay healthy on the offensive side of the ball, they're going to have zero issues winning this division. And I just kind of look at them as being the most consistent team on the offensive side of the ball. They really have not fallen back yet offensively. And that's really where they've been able to avoid most of their injuries. It's pretty much just been the starting pitching position and not in their batting order. Then the next topic I have for MLB second half storylines is, can anyone stop the Detroit Tigers? The Tigers have been the best team pretty much all season long. Best starting pitching rotation, best batting order. They just get it done in every way, shape, and form. They're great defensively. They've got a solid manager who's already taken his team to the World Series and won when he was with the Houston Astros. So this is a very, very, very good team. Tarek Skubal continues to be the most dominating pitcher in the league right now. And Flaherty, he's having a solid year also. And then you just have all these offensive players, Riley Green stepping it up. And you just really look at the Detroit Tigers, especially with the American League, where pretty much only the American League East, those teams are pretty much beating each other up. And then the rest of the American League teams, they're pretty much just whatever. But the Detroit Tigers right now, number one overall seed, and it kind of feels like it's going to continue to be that way if they're able to stave off the injuries and just keep playing at this high level that they're playing at. Because hands down, Detroit has been the best team all season. They've been playing the best baseball. And like I continue to say, they have such a great roster constructed and everybody's playing at a high level right now. I feel like it's going to be very difficult to stop the Detroit Tigers. And I would not be shocked if this ends up being the number one overall seed when it's all said and done once we hit the postseason. And then my final MLB second half storyline I have is who is going to win the National League East. It's obviously a battle between the Philadelphia Phillies and the New York Mets because the Atlanta Braves, they just have not been able to get it going. Now, with that being said, the Braves obviously are a damn good team with a lot of really solid players on their roster. It's just so many injuries have been their issue over the last couple of seasons. And it just feels like every time they get going, they fall back. And they just have yet to show any type of consistency where I feel like they're going to be able to compete with the Mets and the Phillies for this division. So to me, it's basically a race for whoever's going to win between the Phillies and the Mets. They've been rotating back and forth all season long on who has the division lead. You know, the Mets came right out the gate, had a phenomenal year to start. The Phillies kind of started off slow. And they've had their ups and downs throughout the season, but they finally feel like they're getting on a consistent road. And if that seems to be the case, I definitely trust them more at this point in the season than I do the Mets. I mean, the Mets have always been known for being that choke artist team, but now they're starting to suffer a lot of injuries. Their starting pitching rotation is starting to really get decimated with the injuries. And but offensively, they're starting to really get going. I mean, Alonso, career year, but Soto, he's getting back to Soto way. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Mets offensively still stick with it. I feel like it's just going to be their pitching that's the issue, whereas the Phillies have no issues at the starting pitching position. And offensively, they are one of the best teams. As a matter of fact, I feel like they have one of the top rosters in the league. And if they're just able to put it together, especially with the second half, I feel like they should easily win the National League East, but I feel like them and the Mets, they've been rotating for that top spot all season, and I feel like it's going to be a battle all the way till the final week of the season. All right, so moving on to the NFL, because training camp starts in about a week and a half. So how fucking awesome is that? We finally have us some football around the corner. You know, OTAs have been going on lately. So there has been news trickling in. We've had a couple of free agent signings. We're having some contract holdouts and just a bunch of different shit is going on in the NFL right now. So let's get right into it with the NFL and the top five storylines we have heading into training camp. So let's start off with, obviously, the number one storyline has to be, can the Philadelphia Eagles repeat? They are the Super Bowl champions, so all eyes are on them from day one all the way until the end of the season. That's just how it is when you win the Super Bowl. That's what it is, because you are the champion. Everybody's going at you. Now, the thing with the Eagles is even when they won last year, this team has had so much drama and disarray between coaches and players and management and fans. And it's just one of the craziest organizations, but yet they still seem to keep winning. Now, with that being said, I kind of feel like this year is going to be a fallback year for the Eagles. I don't know why. I just feel like they're going to suffer a Super Bowl hangover. They haven't really made any major moves in the offseason where I'm like, oh yeah, that drastically improves this team. So I kind of feel like they're going to fall back just a bit, but at the same time, they still have a talented roster and they always seem to overcome the drama and the issues that seem to arise. So we'll see what happens with the Eagles. I wouldn't be shocked if they're in it all season, but I kind of feel like they're going to have a season where they actually end up falling back. Then the next topic I have for the storylines heading into training camp is two storylines, actually, with the Pittsburgh Steelers. One beginning with Aaron Rodgers. He is going to be their quarterback this year. It looks like this is going to be Aaron Rodgers' last season in the NFL. I mean, he hasn't officially announced it, but it just kind of feels like at this rate with Aaron Rodgers, it's basically year by year. I mean, he's up there. It's basically he's playing for Super Bowl, and that's it. Now, the Steelers do have quite a bit of talent. I mean, they did trade for DK Metcalf, so he definitely has a solid top-tier receiver. They've got a solid tight end with Freiermuth. It's just I'm concerned about the offensive line, which has been a problem since Ben Roethlisberger, by the way. They've not improved this offensive line in many, many years. And then the running game, because it's just it's wide open right now at this point. Now, of course, on the defensive side of the ball, Pittsburgh has always been led by the defense, and then it's the offense that's just able to get by. So I feel like Aaron Rodgers is going to fit right in with this team. It's just the offensive line is a huge concern because he can't move the way he used to. And that was a problem with the New York Jets. That's why he ended up actually getting injured and rupturing his Achilles in game one with the Jets, because they had such a terrible offensive line. So we'll see what happens. But I do feel like on the offensive side of the ball, Aaron Rodgers is going to fit in. Do I think he makes them a Super Bowl contender? I'm going to have to wait and see, because they are in a stacked division. I mean, they have the Ravens in their division. The Browns are a terrible team, but who knows? They could still, you know, give them a loss or two on the season. And then, of course, the Bengals. You don't know what you're going to get from them, but they've been a good team the last couple of seasons. And so we'll see what happens with Pittsburgh. Aaron Rodgers definitely doesn't. He improves them, but to me, he doesn't change any type of trajectory where I look at them and go, yeah, they're going to win the Super Bowl, especially with the other storyline that's going on in Pittsburgh, which I think is the bigger deal, and they definitely need this guy if they're going to compete on any level, and that is TJ Watt. Now, TJ Watt has been holding out. He didn't attend any of their offseason training camps. He's looking to get a new contract. I mean, he has been one of the top defenders in the league since his rookie season. So he obviously deserves to get paid, but it doesn't sound like Pittsburgh wants to pay him. Pittsburgh is a very odd team when it comes to playing players. They will pick and choose which ones they want to play, pay, but sometimes they just don't want to pay you. And some of the quotes that I've been reading, it looks like TJ Watt ain't getting paid. So is he going to hold out training camp? Is he going to hold out all the way through preseason? Is he going to hold out all the way to the regular season at some point? Or is he going to come back? I don't know. Now, what sucks about holdouts is that usually does not bode well for your season. As a matter of fact, it's pretty common, and I don't know why, but it's quite common when a dude holds out that even after they sign the contract or come back, they usually suffer an injury or something shitty happens with the team. So I kind of feel like this is a bad omen for the Pittsburgh Steelers if TJ Watt ends up holding out of training camp, because they're definitely going to need him, because he is the defensive leader. I mean, while they have a whole lot of great guys on defense, I mean, they traded for Jalen Ramsey, so they definitely even bolstered their defense, but no TJ Watt, they ain't shit. So we'll see what happens with Pittsburgh in this offseason. Then my next topic on the storylines heading into training camp is Terry McLaurin, the wide receiver with the Washington Commanders, is not happy with them. He is also looking for a new contract, and it looks like they're not really interested in giving it to him either. So is he going to be traded? Is he going to stay with this team? Because they did pick up Deebo Samuel in the offseason, but if you're asking me, I kind of feel like you want both of them. That's what I would be looking at if I'm trading for Deebo Samuel. Because, you know, Deebo is a great receiver. He's been very, very consistent his whole career. But one thing he's also been consistent at is the injuries. Because he's a bruiser type receiver. He likes to take on dudes. He can run. He is just a really, just a hard-nosed player. So I kind of feel like you want McLaurin because he's that quick dude down the seam who could just run up the sideline and just make the big bombs, while Deebo can, you know, be that guy who you hand the ball off to, or who takes the short routes, or, you know, he just is that, he's such a five-tool player that you just want the two of them to work together. But right now, it does not look like that's going to happen. And so it's looking like McLaurin is either not going to show up for training camp, or they may potentially trade him. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with them, because McLaurin, obviously, he has been huge for Washington over the last couple of seasons, especially last year with the growth of Daniels at quarterback as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because I feel like Washington's definitely going to need McLaurin if they want to have the explosive offense that they're looking to have this season. Then the next topic I have on the storylines heading into training camp, can anyone dethrone the Kansas City Chiefs? Not just in the AFC, but I'm mostly talking about in their division, the AFC West. Because every team in the AFC West this offseason actually made improvements. And they can be competitive, but the question is, will they be competitive? Now, to me, the Chiefs are the Chiefs until they are dethroned. It doesn't matter how many guys they lose in the offseason, how much turnover they have with certain players. As long as they have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, this team is going to be competing every single season. Now, like I said, every team in their division has stepped it up just a bit in many different ways. So let's start off with the Las Vegas Raiders. They ended up signing Pete Carroll as their coach in the offseason. And then they ended up trading for Geno Smith from the Seattle Seahawks. So now they have a new quarterback. Geno has been a journeyman most of his career up until he got to Seattle. Then once he hit Seattle, he actually earned the starting quarterback position and it never went back. For some reason, they traded him. Not sure why, but they did. Now, how's he going to fit in with Vegas? Because Vegas, on the offensive side of the ball, has way, way, way too many questions. They've got Devontae Adams, so of course he's got that there. But other than Devontae Adams, their offensive line is sketch. Every other receiver is sketch. And the ground attack is sketch. So we'll see what happens there. And then defense, I don't know what's going on there. And this is still the Raiders, for Christ's sake. So until the Raiders can actually prove it, I don't think they're a competitor. Then you got the Chargers. And, Harbaugh, he's been very successful over the years with every team he goes to. He usually improves them every year. So I feel like the Chargers are definitely going to improve, but they're still the Chargers. They always just fall short. And until they don't fall short, I can't pick them, especially over a team like the Chiefs. But then I turn to Denver. I feel like Denver, out of all of the teams in this division, has the best shot at dethroning the Chiefs, simply because, you know, Sean Payton has been a great coach throughout his entire career. And he completely turned around the Saints organization, and he's basically done that already with the Denver Broncos since he's taken over as the coach. They improve every single year. And, you know, Bo Nix heading into his second season, so is he going to have a sophomore slump, or is he just going to improve? And I kind of look at the Broncos as the one team in this division that could potentially dethrone the Chiefs. But like I started off this segment saying is, until somebody actually does it, I can't pick against the Chiefs. So I'm probably going to be picking the Chiefs to win their division when I do my preseason picks. But who knows? It's just, can anybody finally dethrone the stupid-ass Chiefs? We'll find out this season. And then rounding out the storylines heading into training camp is going to be, how will the Jacksonville Jaguars use their first-round draft pick, Travis Hunter? He's obviously going to be wide receiver for sure, but is he going to play cornerback as well? And he's been, every one of his practices so far, he's gotten all the wide receiver reps, but on the defensive side of the ball, not so much. So is he going to be the dual threat player he was hoping to be this season? I don't know, because it's been looking like no, but at the same time, maybe they're just kind of holding back until training camp and they're going to see how it goes. But we haven't really had a dual threat type of player really since Deion Sanders, just because you don't really want your guys going out there playing on offense and defense. For many reasons, not just injuries. It's just, you really think about it. You're really exhausting yourself. You're really exerting all your energy. At the same time, you know, when the defense is on the field, the offensive guys are usually talking with their coaches, going over plays and what they could improve and what they could do better on the next possession. And then defense is the same thing. They're going over plays and what they could do best on their next possession as well. So it's kind of like you kind of need to be in those moments on the sideline, but at the same time, who the hell knows? And also at the same time, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars. You never know what the hell's going to go on with this team, but it's a brand new regime over here in Jacksonville. And Travis Hunter, I know before he got drafted, he said, hey, I want to play both positions. But at this point in time, it looks like the Jaguars are leaning towards just using him as a wide receiver. But hey, maybe they're going to start off at wide receiver, and then as the season wears on, maybe give him some here and there cornerback, just throw him in on occasions rather than every single time. All right, moving on to the NBA, and we're going to go over the Trop 5 NBA offseason storylines because we have quite a few going on in the NBA. I mean, there's been just a ton of free agency signings already. The thing about the NBA is there pretty much is never a lull. We just had the NBA finals last month. And it's like, then once the finals end, then it's the draft, then it's free agency, and then it's summer league is going on. It's like basketball almost never stops, even though it's the offseason. So let's get right into it. Number one topic is obviously, will Giannis Antetokounmpo be traded this offseason? Every day it seems to trade. Yesterday, he basically said he doesn't want to be traded. But, you know, this Milwaukee Bucks team is, they've pretty much been in a, I don't want to call it rebuilding mode, but a definitely finding yourself mode for basically since they won the championship. They won the championship and they've just been trying to find themselves every single season. They keep trying to fit in new pieces who just don't work out. And, you know, then they got rid of Damian Lillard just drastically a couple weeks ago. And it's like, so what are they going to do? I mean, they've been talking about trading Giannis since last season. And now it's really just been heating up. So what teams are going to trade for him? You know, there's been here and there saying, is he going to go to Miami? Potentially the New York Knicks is another team. But it's just been a lot of just throwing names out there. And I can't really take anything seriously until it actually happens. Because he may not even end up getting traded. You just don't know. But it kind of feels like at some point this offseason, Giannis is going to be traded. It's going to be intriguing to see where he ends up. Because there are quite a few teams that could absolutely use his services, but who is going to be the team that trades for him and ultimately who they end up trading for? Or will he still be in Milwaukee next year? I guess we will find out. Then the second storyline I have in the NBA offseason storylines is, I just mentioned him, where will Damian Lillard go? Because he was just dropped by the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, they traded for him last year and, you know, it didn't work out. And so he's going to be on the free agency market. Now, Dame has been one of the top point guards when healthy. And so definitely whoever signs him is getting an excellent player. It's just, can he stay healthy? I kind of feel like he needs to go to a team where he's not the go-to guy. Not sure. They really haven't been talking about where potentially he could end up going. But, you know, the good thing for Dame is he finally gets to pick where he wants to go. He finally gets to pick what he wants to do. You know, he rode with the Portland Trail Blazers for many years, put up with just their up and down seasons, and ultimately they ended up trading him to Milwaukee. Didn't work out there. So, you know, this offseason he gets to choose where he wants to go, and good for him. And whoever gets him, I feel like is getting a solid top-notch player. Then the next topic I have on the NBA offseason storylines is Cooper Flagg. He was the number one overall pick in the draft this year by the Dallas Mavericks, and Summer League just started this week. As a matter of fact, he just played last night, dropped 10 points. It was a pretty decent game from him, nothing earth-shattering. But what's going to happen to him this year? I mean, the Dallas Mavericks are not a bad team at all. So it's not like he's walking into some shit team. Usually when you're the number one overall pick, you're walking into one of the worst situations possible, usually. But this is actually, you've got Anthony Davis, a championship caliber player. And then you've got Kyrie Irving, another championship caliber player. So you put those three together and it kind of feels like that's going to be a pretty solid team. And Cooper Flagg and his summer league experience, it's going to just kind of show what he could do this offseason. I mean, he's only 18 years old. That's what's crazy about this. He's only 18 years old, so he's definitely going to not only grow as a player, but he's probably going to grow more into his body, probably try and get some more muscle over the years. I mean, not immediately, but I feel like he's just going to kind of grow into himself as the season, as his career goes on. But it began last night. And we're going to see now the Cooper Flagg era with the Dallas Mavericks. The next NBA offseason storyline I have is, what is going on with the Boston Celtics? They are having a fire sale of an offseason. Now, they did mention they are trying to keep within the salary cap because they have been spending a whole lot of money over the last couple of seasons. So they did have to part ways with a couple of guys already. They ended up trading Porzingis a couple of weeks ago to the Atlanta Hawks, so they no longer have him. And then Drew Holiday, they also got rid of him as well. So it kind of feels like the Boston Celtics are going to be a very weird team next year. I say that because, you know, it's still the Eastern Conference. The Eastern Conference has not been as stacked as the Western Conference for many years right now. So it's a little bit easier for an Eastern Conference team that's okay to make the playoffs. But the thing about the Celtics next year, not only did they lose Porzingis, Drew Holiday, and they potentially are talking about losing a few other guys as well, Jason Tatum's probably going to miss the majority of, if not the entire season next year. So that pretty much just leaves Jaylen Brown as the dude. So it's already been an interesting offseason for the Boston Celtics. And so we'll see what happens with them the rest of this offseason and if they're even a competitive team next year. And then rounding out my NBA offseason storylines, I don't know how serious I'm taking this storyline, which is why it's the last storyline. I really just threw it in there because it's something the NBA world is really talking about right now. So that must mean something is rumbling, but I don't think it's ultimately going to happen. And that is, are the Lakers going to trade LeBron James? Now, he opted in for $51 million, by the way, so he's getting paid this year, as he should. He's fucking LeBron James, for Christ's sake. But ever since he opted in, I have been reading nothing but articles about the Lakers are going to trade him now. And the trade market doesn't actually seem to be that good for LeBron, apparently. So I don't know. A lot of this kind of just seems like, you know, there's always, the sports media always loves to gin people up. And they usually, they always throw bullshit out there when there really is nothing to it. I mean, there are so many stories I could point out over the many, many years I've been watching sports, and they've never, ever, ever panned out. And it's just part of the reason why is because the sports media controls the sports media, and they're never going to call themselves out when they're wrong about things. And so with LeBron James, they always love drama with LeBron James, and they always like to talk about LeBron James because, of course, he's newsworthy for them. And so I'm kind of wondering if that's what's going on here, because it kind of feels like they took some words that Rich Paul, his agent, took out of context. But to me, I feel like the Lakers are going to be holding on to LeBron. I don't really know why LeBron would want to leave. He likes L.A. If you actually look at his career outside of basketball, he's been making bank since the day he moved to L.A., which is really why he moved to L.A. for his other business ventures. And then, of course, when you're with the Lakers, your $51 million contract, come the fuck on. That's what he's making this year alone, okay? So it's very beneficial for LeBron to be a Los Angeles Laker. But at the same time, he's LeBron James. LeBron could literally go play for the Orlando Magic, at one of the, you know, like, they don't have a huge fan base. They're a nobody team, basically. But if LeBron went and played for them, he'd make them a whole bunch of money because he's goddamn LeBron James. He's going to change the trajectory and interest of every single team when he's on it. But I just don't see the benefit for either the Lakers or LeBron if he is traded. They're talking about potentially maybe him going to Golden State, but let's just think about this. If LeBron James is traded, you're getting some type of haul if you're trading away LeBron James. So that means Golden State's going to have to give up something. So it doesn't look like there's a really hot market for him right now. The teams that they've been throwing out there that they say have been interested don't really sound like they're interested. They talked about the Dallas Mavericks, and they were like, no, we're not going to sign him unless he happens to get released or something. But I personally think this is just ginned up drama that the sports world is throwing out there because they have to throw out ginned up drama. I think when the season begins, LeBron's going to be a Laker because, like I said, why would he want to leave the Lakers? Not only because of his business ventures, but I mean, hello, him, Luka, Austin Reeves, this Lakers team is pretty goddamn stacked. So we'll see what happens. But since everybody's talking about it, I felt like I had to talk about it, even though I personally, as a Lakers fan, I don't think LeBron's going anywhere. I think LeBron James is going to be with the Los Angeles Lakers game one of the regular season. Now, moving on to fights. I wanted to do the top five upcoming fights, but unfortunately in the fight world, this goes for both UFC and boxing, it's a very disappointing year. I mean, the beginning of the year started out disappointing, and there is only one good boxing match that is coming up on September 13th. And that's the only thing I get to talk about when it comes to fights, because the UFC's upcoming fights, snooze fest, and Then, of course, boxing, it's just mostly those crappy-ass, gimmicky Jake Paul fights. So we really only have one fight to talk about that's coming up on September 13th in Las Vegas, and that is between the two top-tier boxers in the game today. Legit boxers, not bitch-ass, fake-ass, scumlord boxers. And I put boxer in quote when discussing Jake Paul because that dude ain't a fucking boxer. He's a showman. He's great at business and being a showman, but he ain't a good-ass boxer. He would get his ass beat by both of these dudes. Real boxers. Canelo Alvarez and Terrence Crawford. These are the two top-tier boxers in the game today. And what's going to be so great about this boxing match is it's going to be on Netflix. You ain't got to do pay-per-view on this one. If you've got Netflix or you want to just purchase Netflix for this fight, you can do it. You ain't got to pay $60 to $100-something dollars for this fight. This is going to be huge for the boxing world. Abso-fucking-lutely huge. Because like I said, these are the two top dudes. Now me, if you've been listening to the show, you know Canelo is my dude. I love me some Canelo Alvarez. Favorite boxer in the game right now. Love Crawford, though, too. Now, I didn't really ever think that was going to happen because Crawford is a lower weight class than Canelo's been at. Canelo's been at the 168 weight class, and Crawford's been more in the 140, most recently at the 154 weight class. So he actually ended up having to gain a lot of weight to do this one. He had to bulk up to 168 in this one. But both of these guys, technically sound boxers. They are so great at counterpunching. It's going to be such a great match to watch, I feel like, just from a complete technical standpoint. I feel like it's going to go the distance. Both of these guys are great knockout artists, but the thing is, Canelo hasn't knocked out anybody in quite some time. And then Crawford, I feel like, I don't want to say this, or anything, but I feel like Crawford's going to have issues simply because he's not used to fighting at this level, at the 168-pound level, whereas Canelo has been doing it for years now. He's been up here for a while, and Canelo's got so much experience. That's why he's so good. That's why he's so hard to beat, because he's fought the best. He fights so often, and he knows just what to take from every fight that he's ever done and improve upon it every single time. And not that Crawford doesn't do that. Crawford absolutely does that. It's just I feel like you're going from 154 pounds to 168. That's a big deal. You have no idea how you're going to fight at the 168 level. So I think it's going to be an uphill battle for Crawford. I feel like Canelo is going to work him for most of it. I don't think it's going to be a knockout from either guy, and I think it's going to go the distance. But it is going to be fantastic because it's going to be a huge night in boxing. I'm absolutely looking forward to it, and I hope we get as good as a fight as I expect us to get, because these two guys are great in the sport, and we've all been really waiting for this fight for quite some time because they are the two top-tier guys. It's just Crawford has had to move up in this weight class, and now he finally did it. And like I said, it's going to be on Netflix, so you can watch it. We don't have to pay a lot of money for this one, so I feel like it is going to be one of the biggest boxing events, period. So looking forward to that, but that's the only fight we have coming up. No good UFC fights coming up. No other really major boxing events coming up. There's one coming up soon. I think it's this weekend, as a matter of fact. But, it really wasn't as worthy as Canelo versus Crawford. So there you have it. All right, y'all. Enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.